Warren Sandy, who used to be the president of the Navigators, has some one-liners that I like to quote. And one of them was, "The longer you live, the older you get." Now, we want to illustrate that to start off here with. My wife graduated from high school in 1933, and they made a sketch of the prom queen. 6 years later, at a reunion, they made another sketch of her. So the longer you live, the older you get. Thank you, Eric. I've heard that every speaker finds himself confronted with four speeches. The one they prepared, the one they gave, the one they wished they'd given, and the one they were quoted as having given. So one of these four is going to come out here tonight. I don't know which one. We'll decide afterwards which one. I'm always delighted to see the so many younger people here. There used to be a saying around that don't talk about that Bible to me. There's not a word of truth in it. You ever hear that expression? Well, maybe it's just the older generation that's heard that. Well, I knew a medical doctor that used to talk to his patients when he felt it was appropriate. So one day, one of his patients said, "Don't quote that Bible to me. There's not a bit of truth in it." So the doctor said, "I can make you change your mind in 30 seconds. No way. May I try?" He said, "Yes, go ahead." So he asked his nurse to bring a smock and put it around her neck like I'm going to get a haircut, and covered all around his clothes. Then he put his hand on his shoulder, reached over, and grabbed his nose and began to twist it. And the patient said, "Oh, what's this all about? You know, I didn't get permission to do that." So he picked up and read from Proverbs chapter 30, verse 33, which says, "Surely the churning of milk brings forth butter, and the wringing of the nose brings forth blood." So I proceed with the demonstration. And the patient admitted, "Well, there's at least one line in the Bible that is true." And of course, Dr. Wilson showed him some more. Well, I have a topic here tonight that I will try to stick with. Finishing a course. This is mentioned three times in the Bible and applies to an athlete, mostly a runner. Here, so in 2 Timothy 3:8, "I've fought the good fight, I've finished the race, I've kept the faith." Now, the King James translates that, "I've finished my course." And that's supposedly the first mention of golf in the Bible. But the newer translation is translated a little bit different. Okay, the next one here. And Paul, I don't have to read this. You can read that. See it just as well as I can. So runners are a good model for the Christian race. It illustrates preparation, actual running of the race, and the goal. But there's another model that I want to suggest to you tonight. I'm sure there's some of you in this room that are acquainted with Ford Madison. Some of you know Ford. I'm sure he's attended this conference sometime in the past. Well, he used to start convenience stores and then sell them to 7-Eleven. So he did pretty well in that business-wise. He called them Scotty Stops. One day I was having lunch with him, and he said, Ford, what's your main ministry? I see that you fly to Moscow once a month to have a Bible study. and you're involved here. Your name's always in the paper, all you're doing. What is your main ministry? He said, I only have one ministry. I said, well, from what I read in the paper, you've involved a lot of things. I only have one ministry. Tell me about it. He said, well, a few weeks ago, my wife Barbara and I sat down and decided we've got about 18 years left of productive time. So we decided this next year we will take one couple and spend a year with them and try to build them up to the point that next year they can take a couple and do the same thing. So we'll do that every year for the next 18 years and hope that they do the same. So I sat down in front of my calculator and said, now suppose this really happened. And they decided after 18 years to have a reunion. Where would they have it? Well, the number's about 20,000. So it would take Madison Square Garden to seat the people if this happened. Now, making another assumption, just assume that each one of this 20,000 were responsible for five new people coming to Christ. And they had a reunion at the same time. They would have to take Yankee Stadium to seat those five. What a reunion that would be. All the originals in Madison Square Garden, just some of the fruit in Yankee Stadium. I like that model a little bit better. Well, about finishing up the course. Don't you? Is that a little better model to follow than the runner that has temporary goals? Okay. So I'm going to talk about finishing well, finishing strong. And of course, the most important thing is to get in the race. Do you remember a few years ago at the Olympics, one of the, I don't know, it was a marathon or some other race, that it ended in this huge stadium. So all the crowd was waiting, and pretty soon this runner came in. They all gave him a standing ovation. And then he was taken into custody because he wasn't in the race at all. He just dressed like a runner and went in ahead of everybody else. Now, I want to tell you how I determine if I'm in the race. You know, when children are young, they use fractions for their ages, you know, 3.5 and so forth. Well, my last birthday, I was 97. But I'm past half now, so I'm 97 and a half. And I'm trying to stay in the race right up the end. I want to tell you how that I do that. Three things. I will not deny Christ. First of all, by my silence. I figured out what my job description is at this time in life. And that is to represent Jesus Christ. Every day I've got a bunch of errands to run, meet a lot of people. So my job is not to go down to Staples and buy something from my computer. It's to interact with all the people that I need. And if possible, leave them with the impression they've been in the presence of someone who believes the Bible. I will not have time to give a lot of examples of that, but it's a lot of fun. Last night, or night before last, I flew from Colorado Springs to Phoenix. And then last night I flew from Phoenix to Dallas. And quite strange, I got on an airplane, three seats, and I was the only one in my seat. I haven't done that for 20 years, you know. And I was disappointed because I wasn't sitting next to somebody. Flying from Denver to Phoenix the day before, had a rather talkative businesswoman on one side. The guy on my right side was reading a book, and I thought he was so interested, you know, that probably couldn't get to him. But I talked to this woman about her, and she opened up and told me about her, where she stood spiritually. Then when I turned to him, there were tears in his eyes. And he said, my brother has terminal cancer, and I've just been to visit him. So we had a good talk. So when I got on those empty seats last night, I was disappointed to be there all by myself. Occasionally on an airplane, if I can't get in touch any other way, I just take the Bible out, read it. I was flying from Denver to Colorado Springs once, and I wasn't able to get in touch with the guy next to me, so I started reading the Bible. And you know, between Denver and Colorado Springs is some of the roughest weather there is. The wind rolls in the mountains and bounces back. He said, you must be expecting a pretty rough landing here over there. I was on a plane one day with a pro golfer, and I couldn't get in conversation, so I opened up the Bible and said, do you ever read the Bible? He said, no. I said, do you have a Bible? He said, no. I said, would you accept one if I gave it to you? He said, no. So that conversation didn't go very far. But I yell a lot, and my favorite approach is with waitresses. I say, do you have to work on Sunday? And most of them do, and I say, well, I'm sorry about that, because you can't go to church. I mentioned this the other day to one, and she said, when is it? So I gathered she wasn't, you know, very familiar. Well, I try to, if I'm never denying Christ by my silence, then I feel I'm in the race. I will not deny him by my conduct when I do not get what I want when I want it. I spend a lot of time with students and ask them, what is your basic philosophy of life? And they don't have one, most of them. I said, well, I'm going to tell you a suggestion. You tell me whether or not I'm on the right track. Is your philosophy, I want what I want, when I want it, get out of my way? And most of them smile and say, yeah, that matches pretty well. Well, we're never so apt to lose our testimony, I think, than when we can't get what we want when we want it. So I try not to lose my testimony when I can't get what I want when I want it. You know, our behavior can get out of control when I can't get what I want when I want it. The first thing is impatience, frustration, anger, violence, and in case of road rage, we've had a couple of murders in my home city just because somebody cut them off. I think that's the biggest struggle I have. And as I'm getting older, I see an extension cord on the floor, and I tell my foot to step over it. And it doesn't do it. It stumbles over it. It just catches. So, you know, I've been a military officer, and I'm used to when I give an order, well, it gets done. But my own body won't obey me anymore. And that's one of my frustrations now. And I beat on it a little bit, but it still doesn't respond. And then the third thing here. I will not deny him by sitting on the bench when the coach says, get back in the action. I will not deny him by self-imposed guilt feelings. You know, there's a difference between guilt and guilt feelings. Christ has dealt with guilt. Guilt feelings are self-imposed. And often, I think, it's easy to mistake a bruised and wounded ego for the conviction of the Holy Spirit. So I try not to sit on the bench when the coach says, get back in the game. So that's kind of what I use to see if I'm in the race. Is that a good definition of pride? Preoccupation with self. is that the greater sin to be preoccupied with our failures than with our successes? I think that it is, to be preoccupied with failure once we've met the condition for restoration. Okay, now I want to get into the race proper. And this outline is based on four words, each beginning with the letter D, that makes it easy to remember. The first one is, discover your gift. We'll come to a verse in a minute about 1 Peter 4:10, that I believe it's saying God has given to every person a special gift. Discover your gift. I guess I'm giving more of a testimony tonight than I am teaching or preaching. In my mid-40s, I was discouraged. I don't know how old you were, Bill, when you were discouraged, but and somehow life just wasn't fulfilling. And I tried to track it down. Now, what's my problem? Well, maybe I need more knowledge. Maybe I need more experience. But I took a month of study, and as a result of that, I said, what I need is not more knowledge, not more experience. It's the motivation to put into practice the knowledge and experience that I have already. So I did a lot of study on this. And one of the things I discovered in the study was that at least 90% of all people have some degree of misconcept about what they're good at. Well, I know people like that. You know, somebody said anybody that could strum a guitar these days thinks they're a theologian. Some of the words they put with it, you know. And I couldn't find any reason to accept myself. So I took my three closest friends and said, how do I come across to you? How do I impact you? Don't try to separate. Just talk about gifts, personality, and so forth. How do I come across? Now, to make it easy, put it in terms of strengths and weaknesses. What comes across strong to you about me? What comes across weak? About 3 months before, I'd taken some time alone, and I put a list of what I thought were my greatest strengths and greatest weaknesses. Well, they didn't want to do it. My friends didn't. So I said, well, just write it down on a card, give it to a secretary to shuffle the cards, and then give it to me mixed up so I won't know who said what. So they did. And I got the page. I was just getting ready to leave on an overseas trip. And so the secretary saw me get in my car, come out, hand it to me. I laid it on the seat. And as soon as I got on the straight road, I kind of picked it up. Naturally, I looked at the weaknesses first, and my blood pressure went up. How in the world are these guys, you know? How come they said that about me? How come they're judging me, you know? I really got my blood pressure up. And then, finally, I took their list and compared it with my list. And what I had listed as my greatest strength, all three of them said was a major weakness. Two of the things that I had listed as weaknesses, they said were major strengths. Well, I knew these guys knew me. They loved me. They had no reason not to be objective. So I said, they're right. I'm wrong. So I took the area that I thought was a strength, retired it. I brought the two areas I thought were weakness out of retirement. And it's the most liberating experience of my life. All of a sudden, I was able to operate in who I really was, the way God had made me. So I recommend this to you. Discover your gift. The only people that can tell you the truth about yourself is those you have impacted over a period of time. They can tell you the truth about yourself. And it's liberating to start operating in your strengths. Discover your gift. That's the first one. Now the next one here is dedicate your gift to a higher cause. Each one should use whatever gift he has, Reeves, to serve others. And I've noticed this, there's a high suicide rate among those who use their gift selfishly or for fame and fortune. Now the previous one, we go back to the one previous to that here. Yeah. I haven't verified this personally, but I think it came from good sources that Billy Graham reached his height about the same time that Jack Parr did on late night television. And CBS offered him $1 million a year to go on opposite Jack Parr. And so he said, what would I do? Late night show. They recognized he could connect with people. And they said, anything you want. It's all yours. He had offers to have a career in Hollywood. Any role he wanted. On Broadway as a Shakespearean actor. He's probably glad today he dedicated his gift to a higher cause. So that's the second D. Dedicate your gift to a higher cause. Now the third is develop your gift. You know, when the summary of your life and my life is made, maybe it'll be on the tombstone, our sphere of influence will probably be relative to how well we developed our gift. Think that over for a minute. It's all over. Look back. Your influence is relative to how well you developed your gift. Dr. Ben Carson, leading brain surgeon in the world, Christian. People come all over the world to hear him, and he gives his testimony. I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of people that he's shared the gospel with because he has developed his gift. Now, if you want to disagree with me, feel free to. If you want to hiss, feel free. If you want to boo and you want to applaud, whatever your reaction is, I don't mind. I heard about a preacher once that was preaching on Christ being the only perfect man that ever lived. And he's making his points, and about halfway through his message, man stood up and said, I disagree with you. Jesus is not the only perfect man that ever lived. The preacher was a little bit taken back, and he said, well, that's what I've always been taught and believed. Do you know who this person is? Who is the other person? He said, well, I don't know him personally, but I know about him. So the preacher said, tell me about him. Who is this other perfect man that lived? He said, my wife's first husband. So, you want to interrupt like he did? Why, go ahead. Develop your gift. How the fourth D, deploy your gift. When we deploy our gift, we're fulfilling the purpose for which we were created. And consequently, we enjoy a life of personal fulfillment. You know, I understand that 50% of our energy is latent emotional energy. When you're doing what you like to do, you have 50% more energy than when you're doing something you don't like to do. So all of a sudden, life really gets rich when you're deploying your gift. Well, with these three friends I talked about, I think they helped me discover my gift. And they kind of agreed that it was teaching. And I do a lot of teaching. And I'm going to leave here Saturday to go to Pittsburgh for a conference. I'm going to leave Pittsburgh and go to New York for a conference. 2 days later, I'm going to spend a week on the University of Illinois campus. The man in charge of our ministry wants me to meet with every one of his people he's in contact with. And I'm booked through April. At my age, what am I doing running around like this? Well, if I have the gift of teaching, I want to exercise it. Get out there and do it. And maybe that's what helps me still get around at age 97 and a half. I was explaining this to my son-in-law one day, and my 11-year-old granddaughter was there, and I didn't know she was listening. She was reading a book, and after I got through, she said, Grandpa, I think you need to add a fifth D. I said, oh, what's that? And she said, Dr. Pepper. The only soft drink we keep in the refrigerator is Dr. Pepper. And I think she had been looking around for something else to drink, decided that that's probably what sustained our lives with Dr. Pepper. But I haven't added that to the four D's. We're talking about finishing well. I want to mention this. We'll come back to four D's in a minute. You ever feel overwhelmed? Like maybe Bill mentioned here. Tell you what I believe at my age. When we are healthy, mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, we can solve any problem. I have an opportunity to counsel people along this line. And just the other day a person, I said, told me about the problem. I said, that's not the problem. The problem is your health. When you are healthy in these four areas, you can figure out a way to solve any problem. So the problem is never the problem. It's your health. So in getting older, finishing a course, do everything you can to preserve your health spiritually, mentally, physically, and emotionally. And then no problem is one that you can't solve. Anybody wants to jump up and disagree, you're free to. Never the problem. It's your health. Psalm 18:33. He makes my feet like the feet of a mountain deer, enables me to stand on the heights, is one translation. A friend of mine was interested in what this means, what that meant. He found out that this particular mountain deer in that area had such a sense of balance that when they moved the front foot forward, they put the hind foot in the same footprint with such precision that it took a magnifying glass to find two prints on there. So David said, he doesn't set me on the high place till he makes my feet like the feet of a dove. So, God will never ask you to exercise your gifts in a way that you're not capable of exercising them. My experience is that most of the people that I've seen asked to do a bigger job said, well, in about 6 months, I'll be ready to take that on. And I think that's probably typical that God calls us to a bigger responsibility about 6 months before we think we're ready for it. He's in a hurry to get on with it, get it done. Now, as I said, I had the one I prepared, the one I gave, the one I wish had given. And I think, is that the last one up there? Must be, but I'm not going to finish with, I'll give you a summary here. The book of Judges, 13 judges mentioned. The story about them is about 19 chapters. So each one of them should get just one and a fraction. Is that right? A space. Not like that. Gideon gets three of them. But you know who gets four? Samson. the old reprobate, I like to call him. How in the world does he deserve four chapters? Some of them only get a paragraph in there. I think I know the answer. I want to suggest an answer. It's been said that for every New Testament truth, there is an Old Testament picture. The life of Samson is the Old Testament picture of the gifts in the New Testament. God wanted to liberate the nation of Israel from their neighbors. And Samson was to start that liberation. He gave him the gift of physical strength in order to neutralize Philistines, which is a CIA word for it. Neutralize. Well, a lion tried to decommission him, and it says the Spirit of God came upon him. He just took the lion, upper jaw in one hand, lower jaw in the other, and just ripped him apart, threw the pieces over in the bushes. Then he made a very foolish bet, but he had to pay it. So he killed 30 people. He offered 30 changes of clothes to his friends they'd lost the bet to. And kind of hard to reconcile this, but the Bible says the Spirit of God came on him. And then he killed 1,000 on a hill. And then he killed 3,000 later. Every time Samson made his gift available to God, the Spirit of God empowered that gift and accomplished the purpose. But Samson was very human. And he often used his gift for personal indulgence. And when he did that, somebody put it like this. Sin binds, blinds, and grinds. So when he used his gift for his own selfish purpose, he got bound, eyes punched out, replaced the donkey in the grinding mill. So I believe that's a pattern of the gifts and what God will do for us. I was listening the other day to a scientist. I think I got it right. He said, if the information contained in one cell, of which there are about 24 trillion at birth, were transcribed, it would take 100 million volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica to record the information contained in one cell. Well, someplace in that cell, there's a thread that defines your gift, your special gift. It's in there. It's in all 24 trillion of them there. Have you found it? So what I want to conclude with is the four D's. What's the first one?
Discover
your gift. Be interesting. If we had the time to just find out, how many of you feel like you have discovered your gift? Mid-40s before I got mine. I wish I'd done it sooner. But the only people who can tell you the truth is those on whom you have impacted over a period of time. Second D?
Dedicate.
Third?
Develop.
Time's not wasted in preparing to develop your gift, because how well you develop it defines your contribution to posterity. And the fourth? And we will eliminate the Dr. Pepper. Now, I think we're doing okay for time here. My favorite way of communicating is small groups, where you get feedback. Always question. Does anybody have a comment or a question?
When you were discussing the gifts, Were you referring to, when talking about developing them, you gave the example of the doctor or the surgeon. When you say gifts, are you talking about spiritual gifts or secular gifts or both?
Great question. I'm glad you brought it up. Otherwise, I'd have missed it. I'm in a minority of what I'm going to answer. I think if you don't know how to play the violin and you get converted, you probably won't know how to play the violin after you get converted. So, first of all, 18 gifts mentioned in the New Testament. Music is not mentioned. Is music, Paul, a spiritual gift? Sometimes it's more important than the preaching. I think most of the time isn't mentioned. So I conclude that the 18 gifts mentioned in the New Testament are representative. Now here's where I'm in the minority, what I believe. That talent and gift are almost the same thing. So God, your gift is related to your latent talent, which God energizes as empowers. The talent that's embedded in those cells. So I'm glad you brought that up. So we're not talking about when you get converted, learn to play a violin. Get the gift of playing the violin. You do it. Okay, that's a good question. I'm glad you brought it up. Otherwise, I'd left that out. I had it in my notes, but I didn't get to it there. Is another comment any place? Well, I've heard that there's a Chinese proverb. Okay, we'll a couple of hands here. We'll get them here. It says, it is written, he who rides a tiger is afraid to dismount. So it's always a good idea for any speaker to know where he's going to get off. But a couple of hands went up, so come on up for the microphone here. Let's listen to your question or comment here.
How would you suggest we follow your guidance as it relates to getting our strengths and weaknesses? In other words, some people have a broad spectrum of different friends. Some people have very few. How many do you think you need to get those opinions from to get a relevant feedback on your strengths and weaknesses?
I would say that three or four that you've probably been around for at least a year. That'd be a minimum. Better is people you interacted with. And I have an illustration of that, if you or I have bad breath and it's offensive to people, we probably won't find that out in the quiet time or Bible reading. How do you find out? Somebody that you impacted. Somebody that can straighten you out on that one. In that. So the key word is impact. Someone you have impacted over a period of time to where they can really read you correctly. Yeah.
Yeah, but I wonder if you could illustrate some of these gift ideas with Dawson Trotman or some of the early navigators. As far as gifts, what were their gifts and how do you see them developing those and using those early days?
Yeah, I don't remember ever discussing that with him. We pretty much stuck to the wheel all that we're talking. But and I wrote a book a few years ago. I think some copies were distributed here. That I felt he led by the strength of his personality. You know, he could influence people just by the strength of his personality. That's just kind of a one-word summary in that. In this book I wrote, I compared him with Lauren Sanney. I said, Lauren Sanney led by the integrity of his character. That's the way their influence came out in that. Well, I think I'm off the tiger here. So thank you very much. Great to be with you tonight.
Amen. Good job, Jim.
They just don't bend the way they used to.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.